This is Barron's Live. Each weekday, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Barron's Live, our daily webcast and podcast. I'm Alex Yule, Deputy Editor of Barron's. Thanks for joining us today for another update on tech stocks. We're right in the middle of another tech earnings season, so there's lots to talk about today. Plus, tech stocks are suddenly showing some strength. How long will it last? That's going to be a big topic for us today. And I'm joined by my colleague, Eric Savitz, Barron's Associate Editor, who covers tech for us from Silicon Valley. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Alex.
Thanks for joining us. So, you know, don't look now, but the NASDAQ is up 9% this year. Tell me that this is the start of a new long bull market.
Oh, I wish I could tell you that. I mean, look, I think there's a couple of factors here. One thing is, first of all, we've seen a lot of these moves. So if you look over the last year, I meant to count, I'm not sure how many, but we've seen there were a whole series of like 8, 10, 12% moves by the market over the course of last year's, you know, what was generally a debacle for stocks. And if you go into almost, if you look at almost any bear market, there are always these like short, sharp bear market rallies that, it happens every time there's a big downturn in the market. So the question is whether something more fundamental is happening here. Now, I would say that one thing that's a little different this time is there's this perception on the street, which is reasonable, I think, that the Fed is closer to the end of its tightening cycle than the beginning. So like if we were having this conversation a year ago, we were facing, you know, a long series of Fed interest rate hikes. And that is, in fact, what happened. And that was bad for, you know, stocks generally and for tech in particular. Now the Fed is, you know, a few increases away from being finished. At least that's the conventional wisdom. And that shifts the conversation around tech more to earnings and, you know, the potential for a recession. So the equation is a little bit different, and I would say maybe a little more favorable than it was last year. I wouldn't say that's a reason to be wildly bullish, but it is true that it's probably a little bit better equation than it was a year ago.
Okay. All right. Well, so there's some positivity there. So let's talk about the Fed and tech for a minute. I think a nice way to think about it, where we are in this sort of cycle, might be to compare the Fed to earnings in terms of importance. So next week is a huge week for tech because we get 4 of the 5 big tech companies reporting. We can talk a little bit more about those, and we'll talk more about those in specifics. We also get the Fed's next, the FOMC's next rate setting meeting Tuesday, Wednesday, I believe, with Powell giving his speech on Wednesday after that decision. What do you think actually right now is going to be more important for how tech stocks do next week? This Fed meeting or earnings from Alphabet, Amazon, Meta, and Apple?
Yeah, so good question. I mean, they both matter, but I think from a big picture point of view, the messaging from the Fed is going to carry more weight. I mean, that was true all through 2022. It will remain true for some time to come. Now, it's conceivable that that Powell will sound a little less hawkish. If that was true, the market would have a big rally. If he just confirms, you know, we're staying the course, we're not done yet, we have a long way to go, or whatever he puts it, that would be bearish for stocks, particularly given the strong rally to start the year, as we were talking about. So now I think on tech earnings, we'll get into some of the details, but I think it's really going to be a company by company story. We've seen that already with the names that some of the names that we've seen so far with Netflix and Microsoft and IBM and a few others. They're more company specific stories than they are so far at redefining the market.
So, okay. Yeah. So let's get to that, but I want to stick with macro just a little bit longer. So one of the things, couple of us were going back over some historical data for the NASDAQ. And so we mentioned that it's up 9% so far this year. That's a big move. Of course, stocks tend to do well in January, so maybe you discount that to some degree. But basically, I thought it was interesting that in 2001, of which people remember was in the middle of the kind of dot-com collapse, the NASDAQ was actually up 12.2%. Right. So you might have felt pretty good about the NASDAQ in 2001 after the bubble burst in 2000. Okay, here we're coming back. But then it proceeded to fall 40% or 34% over the next 2 months and actually still made a new bottom, I believe, in 2002. So if we see a similar pattern playing out here, I guess the question is, do you see a similar pattern playing out here? And is this sort of just the middle of the long down bear market for tech?
Right. Well, I think there's a couple things you have to keep in mind. Like, one thing that was true in during the bubble period in 2001 is you began to see a lot of companies that had come public kind of prematurely.
Right.
Companies that came public that were pre-revenue. Right. Yeah. They had an idea, but they didn't have much of anything else. A lot of those kinds of companies, I always say that those companies were coming public, basically coming public at like a Series A venture capital round, but the money was being raised in the public market. So you had like very risky kind of public, and a lot of them blew up, right? And one thing that we had in that time period that we really haven't seen so far is many corporate failures. I mean, so many companies went bankrupt in that time period. Including, by the way, I was working at that time period for a magazine called The Industry Standard that in fact went bankrupt in 2001. So I remember the period well. And in our case, we were, internet magazine, and all of our advertisers were like internet, like marketing businesses, internet infrastructure businesses, and literally all of our advertisers went bankrupt in 1 year. So like, we haven't seen anything like that. And I don't think we're going to see anything quite that severe, but it is worth noting that for all the talk of recession, we haven't had one yet. So, if we actually get a recession of any severity in 23, that's going to impact businesses big and small, and so there's still some risk that we haven't even felt the worst of the
I think that's a really important point. And you get this fairly strong GDP report today, right? And in some ways that's good news, I think, or it is good news, but it also makes you wonder, like you're saying, well, if you still believe kind of what the bond market has been saying, that we're eventually going to get a recession, is this just pushing off the inevitable, which means the pain is going to come later rather than sooner? I guess that's the
main. And then you get into this this sort of debate about what trying to read the tea leaves on how the Fed will respond to that.
Yeah,
as you say, they were going to get some new input from them next week, and if they see that, like in effect, we're not slowing the economy down really. That could mean that they push harder and, move rates higher.
That's good news being bad news again. What do you make then, just when we talked about companies going kind of bankrupt in the bubble, but what have you made about all these layoffs that we've been seeing, right? It's been something that everyone's been talking about. Everyone's been seeing over a month now, 2 months. I mean, is this kind of are tech companies just doing this because other tech companies are doing it and it's sort of just feeding on itself? Are they all in as bad a shape as these layoffs would make it seem? Or are these layoffs really not that big because they're only 5% of the workforce? Like, how should investors think about this, I guess? And then what do you think just kind of tech fans more generally?
So I think there's a few things at work here. One is that quite a few companies overexpanded during the pandemic. The most obvious example of this is Amazon, where they like dramatically built out their logistics network and overshot. And and they've been dealing with that for multiple quarters now. And then you've seen a series of other companies where they're reducing costs in effect to respond to economic conditions and also, getting pressure from Wall Street to reduce costs and be a little more sensitive to their economic futures. And so, you know, we got a great example.
Yeah.
Great example of this was Meta last quarter, right? So, like, you look at, if you remember back last quarter, Meta had an absolutely disastrous quarter. Their stock was down 25%, roughly. I don't know the exact number, but basically it was down like 25% on the earnings report. And the issue was not the numbers themselves. The issue was that they were going to dramatically spend more money on the metaverse and on other infrastructure than the street had anticipated. And the market freaked out and stock sold off. A few weeks later, Meta announces a big round of layoffs. So I think that this is in part the companies being responsive to not just the fact that they overexpanded, but the fact that the street kind of likes when you do that, right? Like, yeah, the street likes you to cut costs. And we've seen this from a whole series of companies. A good example would be a company like Wayfair, which is up like 66% year to date, and which last year was a disaster. You know, they, of course, are the online seller of home goods, furniture, and such. And they've announced a big round of job cuts, and it shows like a sense of, like, you know, you're like putting on your big boy pants and trying to be responsible. And so, you know, we're seeing this from a lot of companies. In some cases, it's companies trimming people that are, you know, like maybe lesser performers. It's kind of an excuse.
Yeah, right.
In a way to be more efficient.
Yeah.
I don't think that this, by the way, like, if you're a talented engineer, I don't think you're going to have any trouble getting a job.
Let's hope.
Yeah. You know.
Okay. So, all right. Well, you mentioned the overexpanding and the pandemic. And the one more big question I kind of wanted to get to was, you know, we spent, and I certainly thought that much of what we saw during the pandemic was a shift in long-term habits. And I think we spent the last year learning that a lot of what changed in the pandemic really was temporary, right? It wasn't permanent. So many trends have kind of reversed. And I wonder, to what extent do you think at this point tech investors need to say to themselves, okay, you know, we need to almost forget this entire period, this 3-year period at this point, of growth, of gains, and every, you know, and go back to, you know, however you thought about tech in 2019 pre-pandemic is really how you should think about tech today.
Yeah, I think that is true in many areas. The textbook case here is personal computers, where we saw, you know, going into the pandemic, the PC market was flat down. There was no growth at all. And then we had this boom where everyone was at home, everyone needed a new laptop, or, you know, you were home with your kids and you needed more computers just to be able to function. And so we saw, like, you know, 40, 50, 60% year-over-year growth in PC demand. That's all completely reversed.
Right.
You know, PC demand is like collapsing. And it's not like, oh, people don't need PCs anymore. It's, no, they, of course they need PCs, but they already have them. They just bought a new one like 2 or 3 years ago. And the useful life of a PC is longer than that. And so we're kind of back to, you know, unit volumes that are kind of like what we were at before the pandemic. So that's the textbook case.
E-commerce would be another example, wouldn't it? At least, you know, it's not.
Yeah. So I think there's a subtle difference in the case of e-commerce, which is, I think that, we certainly pulled forward the growth of e-commerce. Like, you know, we accelerated the adoption of e-commerce. I think there's a little of that has been given back as people like return to stores, you know, actually, right, like go to Safeway or, you know, Costco or wherever periodically. But I do think that in that case, some of that behavior is at least a little bit sticky. Like, I don't think it's like we're gonna completely reverse course. I think, you know, e-commerce continues to take market share from offline commerce, but not at the same rate. And then, of course, that's complicated at the moment by like softer consumer spending trends.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I'll just point out, just for everyone's kind of context, you know, depending on what you believe about this theory, the NASDAQ is still up 17% from its February 2020 high. So Despite all the pain for the Nasdaq last year, we are still well above our pre-pandemic levels. So, you know, keep those two conversations, that data point and the conversation about the pandemic reset in mind, because it maybe is somewhat informative for where tech should go.
Yeah, well, it's like I like to say, stocks are, just because stocks are cheaper doesn't mean stocks are cheap.
Right.
So, you know, we've given some back, but like if you have a longer term view, yeah, to your point, you're still sitting on nice gains.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is a good time to remind folks, please ask questions in the chat, and we will try to get to them during the call. So Eric, let's like kind of shift a little bit. We're in the middle of tech earnings season, as we mentioned, a little bit different this quarter. Usually we get all the big tech earnings in 1 week. They're sort of being nice to us this quarter, in that Microsoft already reported, and then we get a break. And as we said, Amazon, Apple, Alphabet all report next Thursday in 1 day, and Meta reports on Wednesday. So we pretty much still have all the big tech earnings to come. So maybe we should talk through those. You want to tell us a little bit more about what happened with Microsoft first?
Sure. So in Microsoft's case, you know, the numbers were okay for the December quarter. You know, there was no surprise. There was real weakness in their PC-related business, and they still have a big business there in Windows. And, you know, of course, they make Surface PCs, and there are a bunch of other things that are PC-related. And, you know, that business was kind of terrible, and, like, everyone knew it was going to be terrible. No surprises there. Their cloud business, which, you know, includes Azure and a few other moving parts, actually was a little better than expected in the quarter. And as you will recall, Alex, when the numbers initially were reported, the stock actually rallied about 5%. And then they did the call. And on the call, you know, Microsoft's habit is to provide guidance on the call. On the call, they said some disappointing things. Most notably, they provided guidance for Azure, for growth at Azure. They don't report dollar numbers for Azure, by the way, but they reported growth expectations for Azure that were quite a bit below what the street had been looking for the March quarter. So they said that Azure...
So, by the way, because these are still big growth numbers.
Yeah, still big growth numbers. It's not like it's all things are relative, right? Like the street had been expecting that in the March quarter that Azure would grow in the 33-34% range, and the way that the guidance is a little fuzzy, but basically it implied about 30% growth instead. So that's like that's this considerable miss, 3 to 4 percentage points less growth than anticipated. And you know, the market didn't like that very much. And they said a few other things. Their bookings numbers were a little disappointing. They had, they have an advertising business. People forget that Microsoft has an advertising business, both from LinkedIn and from Bing. And they said the advertising business was softer in the December quarter than they had anticipated. So there were a bunch of things that were just not great. The Azure number was the key, and the stocks initially sold off on that. But I will say that one thing that happened is that the analysts on the street kind of pushed back and basically said, look, this is a short-term phenomenon. This is just about, this is about short-term economic fluctuations, and long-term, you know, Azure's still got a fantastic growth story ahead.
Yeah, and the stock is flat that day. They are almost
flat. The stock was kind of flat, as it turned out. So,
okay. So
I think, now I will say that the commentary from Microsoft, of course, sets the stage for some of what we'll hear next week, right? So in particular from Amazon, or if you want to move on to Amazon.
Yeah, sure. So Amazon and Google, Amazon and Alphabet are the two with sort of the big cloud businesses at this point among the rest.
Right. So Amazon is by far the largest. Amazon Web Services is the largest player, even bigger than Azure. Amazon reports results next week. And, you know, there's two big moving parts in their case. Like one is, of course, is AWS, and the other is e-commerce. You know, the e-commerce part has really been troubled for the last few quarters, and for all the reasons we've talked about. Like, it's just the consumers slowed down. They overexpanded. It's been a problem, right? Now, I think, again, this is sort of a short-term problem where they had to fix, they have to fix their cost structure, and they, you know, they have to cope with like a softer environment. But I, you know, the what we heard from Microsoft would suggest AWS is could disappoint in the quarter. We'll see if that happens. But again, these are generally short-term issues for them. And unless they're truly disastrous, I suspect that the stock will hang in. And remember, Amazon had Amazon was a terrible stock last year. Amazon was down about 50% last year. It's done, you know, it's up like 17% this year. So it's had a little bit, you know, along the rally in the market, but you know, the stock is way, way down from its peaks.
It's interesting, by the way, that big tech, among like the snapback that we've seen so far this year, big tech has not really had the snapback yet. Now, maybe that's a healthy thing, right? So while you've had names, like you mentioned, Wayfair is up 60% for the year, Peloton's up almost 50%, Lyft's up 40%. All of those are kind of the smaller, more volatile names. Big tech has not yet seen this big snapback.
I mean, a few of them have. I mean, you know, Microsoft has really done nothing. It's up a couple of percent. Apple's up about 10%. Meta's up 20, and Google's up about 10. NVIDIA's up 33%.
Yes, NVIDIA's the best of the big performers.
So there have been some that have done better, but yeah, they haven't led the way. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, which is interesting. I think it just does often these big tech names during the real go-go times were almost trading more like small caps, you know, 50% gains, and Apple would have had those kind of crazy moves.
So coming back to the cloud for a second, Alex, you know, you mentioned Google Cloud, of course, is the other, they're like kind of the number three player here. You know, Google Cloud is like on a relative basis less important to Alphabet than Azure is to Microsoft or AWS is to Amazon. Google's business is largely driven by advertising, search advertising, advertising on YouTube. Yeah. Those are the major elements of the Google story, and the advertising environment is not really very good. And you know, again, like Microsoft said that they had disappointing results in the recent quarter from their ad business. That is a little bit of a canary in the coal mine that like might be a factor for both Google and Alphabet, I should say, and for Meta, and by the way, and for Amazon, which also has a substantial advertising business.
Yeah, definitely a theme to watch. All right, I wanted to spend some time on Alphabet, because if I'm Alphabet management right now, I am maybe dreading this, you know, as they're preparing this conference call script and the press release for next week, I am really kind of working overtime to figure some things out, because I think Alphabet maybe is going through probably one of its toughest times, you know, ever, because you have all these different things going on. One, they have two active DOJ lawsuits, a new one last week that they're dealing with, trying to essentially break up their ad business. You also have this potentially existential threat that everyone is kind of focused on around ChatGPT and what that could do to Google's search business. And then, as you mentioned, you have advertising kind of really in a soft place. How much trouble do you think Alphabet is in right now? And how much will we learn next week about those three things?
Yeah. So I'm not sure how much we'll learn. On the litigation side, as you mentioned, they were sued this week for a second time. Yeah. The first lawsuit, which was filed like 3 years ago and was focused on allegations that Google's dominates in search, which they do, but you know, the allegation is that they do it in a, you know, antitrust law violating way. That litigation, that case will finally go to trial in September. It has an interesting there's an interesting element to that, which is if the government wins, it could result in a kind of breakup of the longstanding relationship between Google and Apple, where, you know, Google is the primary search provider to Apple. Apple receives large amounts of money in that relationship, and Google gets back a large amount of search traffic But that won't unfold to the fall. And by the way, depending on whatever happens, you can presume that it, you know, if Google loses, that they'll appeal, and so
this sure. will
drag on for years more. And the new lawsuit is focused on their domination of advertising. That one is years away from, you know, hitting a courtroom. You know, it could be the end of the decade before it finally gets resolved. But, you know, there are some serious allegations there about their dominance of advertising. And there is some suspicion on the street that it could eventually result in them having to spin off parts of their advertising business. We'll see. I mean, this goes back to their acquisition of DoubleClick, which was in 2008. So, like, the government wants to undo that deal. Like, there's a lot at stake, but it's going to take a long time, and we're not going to hear anything on the call about that if that's material. On ChatGPT, you know, there have been a lot of, like, you know, kind of conventional wisdom buzz that, like, oh, this is the real threat to Google search. And, you know, there was a story in the New York Times about, Sergey Brin and Larry Page, who've not really been very involved in an active way in the business in recent years, were, you know, seen in headquarters.
Re-engaging.
I'm sorry.
They're re-engaging. I think
they're re-engaging. Yes. Now, on the other hand, you know, they've been investing in AI for a really long time. They own this company called DeepMind, which is an AI business that they bought in, I think, 2014. Like, they're deep into it. They just haven't done a public manifestation of it in the way that, like, ChatGPT right. from OpenAI has. And of course, you know, it's compounded by the fact that Microsoft has been investing in OpenAI and reportedly is going to invest another $10 billion in OpenAI. And, you know, Microsoft intends to incorporate that technology in search and in Azure and various other places. So it is a challenge. I'm not sure that we'll learn too much from the call about that. We'll see. And then, what they will provide some guidance on, right, is on the advertising environment. I think that's one of these cyclical situations that will take some time to play out. I mean, it's not like people are going to stop advertising or stop advertising online. And digital advertising is very powerful. So we'll get some insights on that for sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I want to take a few questions. Steve asks, Eric, you mentioned that we haven't hit bottom yet. That was sort of our view, I think, together. But he asks, what are you looking for as a signal that we may be getting close? Not looking for an exact bottom, but just a sign that we may be getting close. Any thoughts there?
Again, I think there are multiple elements to this. Part of it is going to be about what the Fed has to say. I mean, if the Fed starts, you know, giving bigger hints that it's almost done, that will be a, you know, bell in the night kind of signal, right? Sure. And I think it will be interesting to see, like, how the market reacts to some of these earnings reports. As we were saying in Microsoft's case, you know, if some of the things that they said had happened 6 months ago, you would have probably seen a more significant reaction. So I think there's kind of a signs of sentiment improving market, at least for now.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point.
Right? So it's like, let's say, for example, we haven't talked about Apple at all, but Apple's going to report earnings next week. Expectations are that the numbers on iPhone sales in particular will be not very good. You know, they had this problem with the production and a few other issues in recent months. But if the market kind of shrugs it off, that would be a sign that maybe we're set up for a more durable bottom here.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point, that the reaction to the numbers is going to be maybe as telling as the numbers themselves. And I mean, that's maybe often the case, but particularly to see how the market deals with either disappointment or or upside surprise will be very telling in terms of sentiment. Yeah. Okay, we have another question, a good one from Hal, who asks, are the tech layoffs really due to overexpansion or to an artificially Fed-induced slowdown in demand? I think that gets to kind of bigger questions about the root cause and what the market is really worried about right now. But any thoughts there, kind of Fed versus secular trends?
I'm not sure that I would blame all of that on the Fed. I mean, I think if you think about, like, for example, what's happened at Amazon, they expanded in anticipation that trends that we saw during the pandemic would.
Right.
Sorry, somebody just walked into my house. That's so weird. Anyway, I think that is the Fed's show is artificially slowing down demand when you talk about PCs or smartphones, or I don't really think that's the situation.
Okay.
I think it's pretty clear that that the tech companies overexpanded.
Okay. All right. Here's one more question, and then I think this will have to be it for today. There was a report this morning from the Wall Street Journal that said Stripe, which is this massive fintech player, is finally ready to decide on whether it's going to go public in the next year, or if, you know, short of that, finding a way to provide liquidity to all their employees who have been waiting, to pretty much monetize their options and their holdings. What does that say about the IPO market? They're not saying necessarily they're going to go public in a year, but they're going to make the decision within the year. So presumably they'd like to go public, but they must not feel quite confident enough about saying that. What do you think that tells us about the IPO market, which of course has been almost completely shut down?
Right. Well, at the moment, there isn't any IPO market. I mean, especially for technology stocks, there just isn't one. The only one last year of any consequence was the Intel a sale of their Mobileye business. But other than that, there really wasn't anything. And, I think the question, maybe this would be a big sign that the market behavior is getting better, would be if you start to see a few IPOs. Now, I think, there's some problems, right? One of the problems is that valuations in the private market, mirroring what happened in the public market, got completely out of hand, right? So I've wrote a column a few weeks ago, basically talking about how secondary market transactions in private stock and venture-backed companies. So, you can trade, it's a much more limited market, but you can trade your investments in venture-backed companies through a bunch of different platforms. And those transactions are happening at like 50% of the last round. That's like, we did a round at $1 billion and we're selling stock, at a valuation of $500 million.
Yeah.
So that's a problem, right? Because if you're trying to do an IPO in that environment, like all of your late stage investors, which is like a lot of your like capital, bought in at higher prices. So
yeah.
I think it's going to be hard to do venture backed deals in the current environment. And, it's going to depend a lot on whether they really need the money. But right. If you need the money, then the valuation is less relevant. But if you can raise capital from other sources, and I'd note, by the way, that the venture capital industry has like record high, they call that dry powder. There's like hundreds of billions of dollars sitting on the sidelines. Okay. And then, by the way, the other element of this is you might be able to find some capital from other sources, from private equity funds that are, they're hunting for deals, and even from strategic investors. So
yeah, you just had a very interesting Q&A or column I would suggest folks read on Orlando Bravo at Thoma Bravo and what they're looking for with all of to buy with all of their cash right now. So
yeah, I mean, I think one thing to keep in mind about Thoma Bravo is that they just raised the largest single pool of private equity capital targeted at the tech industry ever. They raised like more than $30 billion. Just a few weeks ago, and when I asked them about where we are and the opportunity that's been created by the sharp sell off in the market, and he basically said we have many 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 times more. I think he said five many's more opportunity than we can tackle. And they've been the buyer of last resort. And, you know, I think that there's going to be more of that. And, you know, they have the ability. One thing that's interesting about what they can do that you can't easily do in the public market is they can fix things, right? So their view is we take companies that are, you know, barely profitable and we create companies with 40% operating margins. And,
yeah.
We can do that because, you know, frankly, they cut costs, they shed assets, they bring some rigor. And then at some point down the road, those businesses might make their way into the public market, but right. That takes longer.
That makes sense. All right. Well, Eric, thank you so much. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks everyone for being here. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow when our new colleagues at energy research firm Opus will be discussing where oil and gasoline prices are likely headed in 2023. Thanks for listening again. Stay well and have a good day.